Good evening, everybody, and welcome. It's 11 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday, January 6, 2021. And thanks for joining us, especially for the 100th episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm going to actually give us some applause for doing that. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I am Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight is Dr. Stephen Mathis, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Shrink. We'll be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat, in our chat room as the show is happening. Pardon me. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. The show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. And now, a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis himself. Take it away, Doc. As always, thank you very much for that. And if you don't mind, please let us know the name of the song and the artist and its relevance to tonight's topic.
Well, that was a shout out to my trivia person tonight, as opposed to the theme, which I normally do, which I actually did last time. But since this is part two from the last time, I thought it'd be kind of a nice consistency dilly, so to speak. So that was a song off the very first mountain recording, mountain climbing, Never in My Life, which was written by Felix Pappalardi, Leslie West, Corky Lang, and Gail Collins, I think. Collins was involved in that. It was Papalardi's wife at the time. excuse me. And the reason I chose that is because my trivia portion tonight is going to be on Leslie, who passed right after our radio show was done last time, and I was recapping all the people we had lost in 2020. I had not gotten word that Leslie had passed away on the 23rd, or Tony Rice for that matter. And so I wanted to do a shout out on Leslie and a kind of a remembrance bio, because he was a huge influence on me and just an incredible guitar player that I think didn't get all the dues he was deserving. So I'm giving him his dues posthumously this evening, and hopefully we'll turn some people on to go back and listen to his music.
That would be awesome. Very deserved. Okay, thank you very much for that. As Dr. Mathis mentions, well, actually, I take that back. He didn't really mention tonight because it's about the trivia section. So I will mention that tonight's episode is OCD versus OCPD part two, because we did run over last time, which we will discuss in a moment. And before we begin our topic discussion, as we usually do, let's first go to the Rock and Roll Shrink Recalls, which is a moment of rock music trivia stories, as he mentioned a minute ago. And the stories will be recounted by Dr. Mathis. So, if you would, sir.
Okay, so as I earlier mentioned, I'm going to be talking about Leslie Weinstein, better known as Leslie West, the lead guitarist, vocalist, songwriter for Mountain back in the late 60s and early 70s. So Leslie was of Jewish descent and grew up in New York and New Jersey. Forget about it. And started out playing guitar with a band called The Vagrants, which were kind of a Young Rascals-esque, kind of R&B-esque, kind of soul-influenced rock band, if you will, which was actually, and kind of a garage, kind of a rock garage version of that, and came out with Papalardi doing production on a lot of the records. And while they weren't a huge hit, they were pretty big in the eastern United States, and they actually did two songs that got a lot of radio play. One was called I Can't Make a Friend, and the other one was a cover of Otis Redding's Respect, which was written and done originally by Otis Redding, not by the person everybody equates it with. So Papalardi had known Leslie through that time, and Leslie was trying to get going on kind of a solo thing. And so Papalardi produced his first solo record, which is called Leslie West Mountain, from which the band came out, which was really pushed a lot by Papalardi, who ended up playing bass and singing and keyboards on the band. Papalardi had had a lot of work. I sort of equate Felix with the American version of Jack Bruce, and they were buddies. And Jack Bruce was, as most of you know, was the bassist and vocalist for Cream, but he also played harmonica, viola, cello, keyboards, you know, you name. I mean, he's disgustingly talented. And so was Felix. And Felix also did some, was a multi-string guy and also played keyboards and vocals and wrote. And anyway, he was also produced Cream's Disraeli Gears, which is the album that has Sunshine of Your Love on it. And Papalardi was the producer of that. So at any rate, he got together with Leslie West and formed the band Mountain, and then went out and started playing as a four-piece with Steve Knight on keyboards, who I think is originally, I can't remember if Steve Knight's from Canada or not, and a drummer, Andy Smart, who also was the drummer for Leslie West Mountain record. And they did their big debut at the original Woodstock Festival in 1969. And what happened was at some point, Andy Smart was shortly thereafter replaced by Corky Lang, who is from Canada, and joined the band and remained the drummer all through the years. Most people know the band Mountain if they know them by the song Mississippi Queen, which is the first song on the first side of the debut album, Mountain Climbing. So Never in My Life was the third song, and the second song was a cover, a brilliant cover, I might add, of Jack Bruce and Peter Brown's theme from a Menagerie Western, which was off of Jack Bruce's first record, which is probably my all-time favorite Jack Bruce song ever. Absolutely love that song. Anyway, he and Mountain went out and did a bunch of gigs, and then Pappalardi left Mountain to concentrate on other production problems, but he's also having hearing issues because Mountain was like, as Rolling Stone magazine, couldn't think of the name of the magazine, sorry, having an anomia moment, dubbed Mountain a louder version of Cream, and they were really loud. I never got to hear them, but I heard they were like ridiculous. Anyway, and then when Pappalardi left to kind of get his hearing back and to work on some other projects in the studio, because of his familiarity with Jack Bruce through Felix Pappalardi, Jack West got with Jack Bruce and Corky Lang and formed the super group West, Bruce, and Lang, and did several records with them. But because of drug issues that both Jack Bruce and Leslie West were having, it severely interfered with a lot of stuff, and they kind of went by the wayside. Well, Leslie West then went on the road doing Leslie West and the Wild West show with drummer Corky Lang. Lang's been with West ever since Mountain Times. But what a lot of people don't know is that they also West got together with Al Cooper, who many people may know as the founding member keyboardist of Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And the two of them actually played some tracks on the Who's record Won't Get Fooled Again. But their version of it didn't get published on the main Who's Next record, but it did come out later on reissues of Who's Next and on kind of a compilation thing that Who put out called Odds and Sods. And they're on that. And Leslie West is playing guitar with Al Cooper playing keyboards. Mountain's gone back together, back and forth over the years, up until really, I think, 2006 or 2007. I think 2007. But in the meantime, West also did some acting roles. He did a movie called Family Honor, where he had a small role, and actually had a small role on Tom Hanks' movie, The Money Pit, which most people probably don't know. He also played the guitar track on the Bo Diddley record on the 20th anniversary of Rock and Roll All-Star record that Bo Diddley did, I think, in 76. And he also got together with Ian Gillan, who the lead vocalist of Deep Purple, off on Ian Gillan's record, and they co-wrote the song Hang Me Out to Dry that was on Gillan's Toolbox record, and also has gotten together with Joe Bonamassa, who most people know as a really superb blues rock guitar player, and recorded a cover of Warren Haynes' song, who's also a fabulous guitarist, If Heartaches Were Nickels, and it was released on Guitarded, which is Leslie West's record, and also on Joe Bonamassa's record, A New Day Yesterday, which is named after a Jethro Tull song that he covers and does a great job, by the way. But he's done pilot shows even with people like Howard Stern, and they did 4, 5, or 6 pilot shows on the Fox network that never got aired. And Stern went, of course, on to do radio and some TV stuff, and Leslie West has appeared on a lot of his radio shows. He also helped contribute music and co-wrote lyrics to one of one of the songs off Clutch's 2001 record, Pure Rock Fury, which is a song called Immortal, which is actually a reworked cover of a song off Leslie West's very first record, Leslie West Mountain, one of the my favorite songs off that record called Baby I'm Down, which I thought was way cool. Also played with Ozzy Osbourne when Ozzy did an album of covers called Undercover, where Ozzy does a remake of what else? Mississippi Queen. and I think that was in 2005. And then West was actually inducted into the Long Island Music Hall of Fame in 2006. And then in 2007, Mountain released what I think is their last record called Masters of War. And they did a lot of Bob Dylan covers off that record. And Ozzy came on and actually did some guest vocals on that record. They then turned around and appeared at Woodstock's 40th anniversary concert. And I think that was in 2009. And that was on stage after the show. Leslie West actually married longtime fiance Jenny Maurer on stage on that, which I thought was way cool.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so I thought that was very cool. And then, unfortunately, because of a very misspent eating history, Leslie West, during most of his life, struggled with multiple drug addictions as well as eating problems. Anybody's ever seen him, he was literally called the Man Mountain for good reason. And eventually developed a very bad case of diabetes. And in 2011, he was about to go on a tour with Michael Schenker, who is another very amazing guitar player that doesn't get his due, original guitar player for UFO. And he and Schenker were going to go on tour, and I forgot who the other guitar player was. I can't remember who the third, but they were going to do like the three guitars tour, and I was like all excited. And then Leslie West had like a major epileptic episode and had to be rushed to the hospital because of the diabetes, not epilepsy, excuse me, because of the diabetes, and had to have his right leg amputated. And that was kind of the end of that. And
oh.
He's done, yeah, he was literally on his last leg. So,
wow.
Yeah, okay.
That's my step.
Yeah, I had to do that. Sorry, Leslie. But he still performed on stage in a wheelchair and did a lot of guest appearances. And I think did his first public appearance in 2011, like 2 months after the amputation. At any rate, he also performed on Eli Cook's record, who's a kind of a blues, kind of a funky, kind of psychedelic blues, country blues rock kind of guy. Off his album called Primitive Sun, and Leslie West plays off that. And that album also got very, very good ratings. So, as I mentioned, Leslie struggled with most of his life with a multiple addiction, most pronouncedly to heroin, cocaine, and morphine, which really derailed both Mountain and West prison lying at various stages, which is really, really kind of sad. What most people don't also know is that he was a bladder cancer survivor in the early 2000s. And, you know, that was in addition to the diabetes. And he also was a cigarette smoker at one time, which I'm sure did not help with the trying to save his leg. At any rate, he went into cardiac arrest in late December of last year. And was rushed to a hospital, but he never regained consciousness. And his brother, Larry West, reported that he had passed away on the 23rd. And I think Leslie was 75 at the time. Most people know that he sort of made, he was known back in the day for playing the Gibson Les Paul Jr. that had the Dog Ear P90 pickups with Sun amplifiers. He kind of put them on, was one of the guys who helped put Sun on the market. And eventually also would play a modified Gibson Flying V, and he had one of the neck pickup removed. And he would use the hole. A lot of times he would use the hole and the extra pickup stuff as a cigarette holder, which I thought was kind of funny. He's played a bunch of guitars throughout the years, including kind of a Japanese company called Elektra, which had kind of an Ampeg Dan Armstrong version. He's played Deans. He's played Westones. Pantera type guitars, but he also played a lot of headless type guitars, most often made by Steinberger and Kramer. I personally, no offense to those folks, I personally hate headless guitars with passion, but you know, what can I tell you? He's also played Carisbo amps and Buddha amplification in more recent years, and typically would employ very little effects, usually delays, choruses, and octavers, which are sort of, Jimi Hendrix was very fond of those too. He had an Octavia one, probably one of the first guys to use that and make it famous on stage. So, again, very, very underrated guy, very imitated guy, influence on a lot of people, and a lot of folks, you know, probably haven't heard of him or don't know of his work. And so I would really encourage our listeners to go back and check his body of work out. It's pretty amazing. He's also has a shoot ton of solo records, where he does kind of like a lot of blues rocky stuff. And, you know, like Clapton, he was very much influenced by the blues. So it's, you know, both of those guys have that in common for their histories. So go check him out. Really good guy. And as a guitar player who was very, very influenced by him, I was incredibly sad to hear about his death. And just to me, a great loss to the community. And he was just a huge influence on my playing. So thanks a lot, Leslie. And hopefully some other people will go back and go, shoot, I should be listening to this guy. So if you're not, if you don't know, my personal opinion, this is just one man's opinion, is the first three records with the original crew of Mountain, Pappalardi, West, Lang, and Steve Knight were just amazing. And certainly the future incarnations of Mountain were cool, but I really, the first three or four records to me are their best work. I just absolutely love it. And just really, 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 really couldn't love it. And of course, Pappalardi, they were during one of their reunions, passed away in early 80s because he was shot by his wife, Gail Collins, at the time. Supposedly him teaching her how to use a derringer, but the real story that I heard, and I can't verify this, so listeners, you know, this is hearsay, is that they were arguing over Pappalardi's affairs, even though they had an open marriage, and his her attempting to get cocaine and accidentally on purpose shot him in the throat with a derringer, supposedly teaching her how to shoot, but frankly, I don't believe it. But just one guy's opinion, folks. Please don't take this for fact. And Galen herself passed away, I think, in 2013 of cancer. So I won't be offending anybody, hopefully, by saying that, but whatever. That's the story.
Fair enough. Okay, that is pretty cool. So I've lost my applause wave. Where'd it go? There it is. I have to give this to you. Okay, so that was a pretty awesome story. Much appreciated. Sorry we've lost him, but thank you teaching us, you know, as often these stories go, where we don't realize that we actually do know somebody pretty well, and sometimes they're unsung heroes of a lot of our musical favorites. So that's one of the great segments.
Yeah, it's the same thing like Pappalardi, because most people don't know he co-produced the Cream albums and played viola and cello with Jack Bruce on several of the records, and played the mellotron on White Room.
Whoa!
That's Felix Pappalardi. Pappalardi is another big influence on me. He and Jack Bruce's bass playing are huge influences on me, just absolutely huge, because I'm also a bassist, and those two guys are just huge influences on my style, just monster players, both of them. And of course, they're both now passed, and I was very glad to be able to see the Cream reunion when they came to New York City, and I was just so happy to see them, because I knew that wasn't going to. Those guys were getting up and probably weren't going to be around, because Bruce had a very bad alcohol problem and already had like rejected three or four liver transplants. So I'm like, okay, this is not going to end well. So
you're like, this is the only time I'll probably see these guys, unless I have a reunion in heaven or something.
Yeah. Oh, well, he and Ginger Baker are there. So as soon as Clapton goes, and I'm not like I want Clapton to go anywhere because he's also one of my heroes. But, you know, at least Felix and Leslie are back together. And maybe when Clapton goes, they can reunite Cream. And, boy, they'll have a ridiculous band there. Holy shit. Yeah. Of course, Hendrix now with Mitch Mitchell. Both of those folks obviously are deceased. And I think Noel Redding has passed also. Billy Cox goes, they're going to have all kind of Hendrix dillies going on. So it's going to be a rocking ass place. holy moly.
Yeah. Cool. All righty. So thank you for that.
Sure.
And again, we will take questions and calls from our listeners in the online chat room throughout the evening until around midnight. And feel free to give us a call on the phone if you'd like. Again, the number is 914-338-0314. Okay, meat and potatoes time. It's OCD versus OCPD. Welcome to part two of two on this topic. So as I mentioned last time, little refresher for you guys, obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, and its lesser known and misunderstood counterpart and related pathology, obsessive compulsive personality disorder, OCPD, are both disorders that many people know, but the majority of lay people don't properly understand and about which are misinformed. And I've been waiting to do this topic for a while. We've skirted around it during several episodes. Most people use these terms interchangeably or to label simple fastidiousness or being particular. Tonight, we hope to educate our audience further on the correct and most current understandings of these and related disorders. In past episodes, we've talked about OCD and or OCPD in episode 7, which was Armchair Psychology, but that was in October 2016. Episode 24, Pathology Chic and Misconceptions, part 1 of 2. And actually, we did it both 24 and 25 because that was a two-parter. And that was in June 2017. Episode 69, which was Hobbies and Collecting versus Hoarding. The reason being, as we'll talk about tonight, hoarding is currently considered to be an offshoot of OCD, although that is under debate, and we'll get into that a little more later tonight. And that was in May of 2019. We've done these allusions to it in a broader context, but we had not previously done a show dedicated to these related pathologies, and that is tonight and also our last show. So OCD is one of the more popular pathologies to tackle in media, pop culture, and entertainment, and it is surrounded by a laundry list of stereotypes, bad data, assumptions, near romanticizing of having it, and other inaccuracies that we hope to address, explain, and or debunk this evening. So last show we covered an overview of OCD and OCPD. Tonight we will continue and discuss our current understanding of OCD and OCPD, myths and misconceptions about them, and resources for dealing with them. Then I don't need to mention again, this show might become two-parter because we already did that. So before we get started, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything that you would like to add before we get going.
No, I'm good.
Okay, so we are skipping part one because we did that last time. Let's go down to part number two, which is our current understanding of OCD and OCPD. And this is one of the most important parts, so I'm glad we're getting to this pretty quickly. The main difference between OCD and OCPD is that OCD is a neurological disorder, and there's other terminology for this I'll get to in a minute, whereas OCPD is essentially a somewhat PTSD-like response to trauma or lack of control in one's life. OCD tends to seem nonsensical and random, but OCPD tends to present how most people stereotype OCD in excessive tidiness or obsession with arranging and controlling one's environment. You see a lot in TV shows and movies, this sort of thing. The main difference is that OCD is designated in the DSM within its own category called obsessive compulsive and related disorders. However, OCPD distinct from these and is considered a personality disorder. And the source for that is Murphy, Timpano, Wheaton, Greenberg, Miguel. It's a paper called Obsessive Compulsive Disorder and Its Related Disorders, a Reappraisal of Obsessive Compulsive Spectrum Concepts. That was in Dialogues Clin Neuroscience. I guess it's a French publication, Clinical Neuroscientific Dialogues in English, but it's written in French.
Yep.
This was published in 2010. Okay, so causes of OCD, and my source for this is the wiki entry and the DSM-5. The official cause is unknown. There appear to be some genetic components, with both identical twins more often affected than both non-identical twins, interestingly. Risk factors include a history of child abuse or other stress-inducing event. That actually surprised me a little. I may come back to you on this, Dr. Mathis, for more commentary at the end of the segment, because I would have expected that more in OCPD, but we'll come back to that. So mm-hmm. some cases have been documented to occur following infections, interestingly. The diagnosis is based on the symptoms and requires ruling out other drug-related or medical causes. Rating scales, such as the Yale-Brown Obsessive-Compulsive Scale, Y-BOCS, can be used to assess the severity. Other disorders with similar symptoms include anxiety disorder, major depressive disorder, eating disorders, tic disorders, and by this we mean, you know, tics like you would see with people with Tourette's, that sort of tic, and obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. Other possible causes could include many different types of medications can create or induce pure OCD in patients that have never had symptoms before. A new chapter about OCD in the DSM-5 2013 now specifically includes drug-induced OCD. For example, atypical antipsychotics, second-generation antipsychotics, such as olanzapine, which is Zyprexa, have been proven to induce de novo OCD in patients. Another possible cause is some forms of autoimmune disorder. A controversial hypothesis, and, you know, there's a lot of scandal about this, and it's just a hypothesis, but they think that some cases of rapid onset of OCD in children and adolescents may be caused by a syndrome connected to group A streptococcal infections, you know, strep, known as pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorders associated with streptococcal infections. And the acronym for that is PANDAS, of course, because kids' diseases all have to have cute names.
And it's unbearable.
Oh! I'm going to take a pause here just to punish you for that one, but to give you an opportunity to speak on that before I get to OCPD. I kind of want to keep these guys separate. Do you want to comment on that? That doesn't involve a pun at all?
Yes, upon my word, I will. So, oh my God, I need a keeper. Okay, so yeah, OCD is most, in my personal opinion, is most assuredly genetic. If you've got somebody who has an anxiety disorder, they're at much higher risk to developing OCD. The kids are at much higher risk for developing OCD. that's also true of the OCPD stuff. Also, if you have a parent with OCD, it's easier to develop OCP. It's more likely you have a chance to develop OCPD, something I know intimately well. My mother was OCD, and I am OCPD. Trauma may or may not be involved. You can have OCD without trauma, absolutely, particularly if you have a genetic component. Certainly, if you have a person who tends to be more perfectionistic and driven, sort of type A-esque, there, and you have a genetic component, you have a higher risk for developing OCD, for sure. That's absolutely true. And so what happens with certain trauma situations is you get somebody, and it has to be a pretty big trauma, but you get somebody who has a trauma that involves, someone who at some level thinks, oh my God, if I'd have just been more careful, if I'd have just done this, or if I hadn't just done that, this person would have been killed, injured, whatever. And that sort of kind of morphs into the OCD thing if the trauma is severe enough. So if you're driving a car and, you know, you had one drink and you're not drunk, you're just barely tipsy, you wouldn't even, you know, tip the scale, and some kid runs in front of your car and you absolutely hit the kid and paralyze the kid or kill him or her or whatever, you know, and the parents are going, look, you know, our kid had no business playing in the road. My kid ran out the road. The kid is, you know, that's no, we don't blame you. We yada, yada, yada. But if you get somebody who's like very, you know, very self-conscious about their stuff, uber responsible, very professionistic, they might go, oh my God, I could have prevented this if I, now they probably couldn't have, but oh my God, I could have prevented this if I just hadn't had that one drink and da 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 da. And so they start to get uber compulsive, literally about what they do, and that sort of can morph into OCD. OCD used to fall under the umbrella of anxiety disorders, but it graduated into its own category in DSM-5. But in previous DSMs, it was out of the anxiety disorders rubric. So if you had like a panic disorder or a phobic disorder, which, you know, would be under anxiety disorders, or generalized anxiety or social phobia or whatever, any anxiety disorder puts you at risk for developing an anxiety and or anxiety-like disorder, which includes OCD and OCPD.
Gotcha. Okay, fair enough. Alrighty, let's go to the next part. Obsessive compulsive personality disorder, OCPD, is a cluster C personality disorder marked by an excessive need for orderliness, neatness, and perfectionism. Symptoms are usually well, in your case, yes, obviously. And they have to be perfect.
Yes, that's
and perfectly painful. Symptoms are usually present by the time a person puns in adulthood. Reaches adulthood and are visible in a variety of situations. This is a distinct disorder from obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, and the relation between the two is contentious. Some studies have found high comorbidity rates between the two disorders, but others have shown little comorbidity. Both disorders may share outside similarities, rigid and ritual-like behaviors, for example. OCPD is highly comorbid with other personality disorders, especially Asperger's syndrome. And yes, we know they folded it into the spectrum, but Dr. Mathis and I have talked extensively about how we think that's BS. eating disorders.
Yeah, I have seen people, just to clarify, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. People with OCPD don't necessarily have the Asperger's syndrome / autism spectrum, but I have seen autism spectrum / Asperger people with OCPD. So it kind of goes in one direction, but not the other, if you're going to see it. Yeah. And the same thing with eating disorders.
And the notes that I have did not indicated that most people that are on the spectrum in a non-Asperger's way tend not to have either one.
So yeah.
If you're
going to
go from the spectrum, Asperger's presentation of it.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, cool. So we're all on the same page with that. You also can see it comorbid with eating disorders, anxiety and mood disorders, and substance use disorders.
Yep.
Signs and symptoms. Obsessive compulsive personality disorder, I'm just going to say OCPD because it's such a mouthful, Jesus, is marked by an excessive obsession with rules, lists, schedules, and order. A need for perfectionism that interferes with efficiency and the ability to complete tasks, a devotion to productivity that hinders interpersonal relationships and leisure time, rigidity and zealousness on matters of morality and ethics. That, interestingly, kind of reminds me a tiny bit of BPD. I don't know if you can comment on that in a bit. An inability to delegate responsibilities or work to others, and I'm going to take a guess it's because if you want something done right, you do it yourself kind of thing.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
That is correct.
I have that big time, and I don't even have OCPD, but that's a thing. Restricted functioning in interpersonal relationships, restricted expression of emotion and affect, and a need for control over one's environment and self. Some of OCPD symptoms are persistent and stable, whilst others are unstable. The obsession with perfectionism, reluctance to delegate tasks to others, and rigidity and stubbornness are stable symptoms. On the other hand, the symptoms that were most likely to change over time were the miserly spending style and the excessive devotion to productivity. This discrepancy in the stability of symptoms may lead to mixed results in terms of the course of the disorder, with some studies showing a remission rate of 58% after a 12-month period, while others suggesting that the symptoms are stable and may worsen with age. And yes, I guess if your magic checklist doesn't agree with each other, that this is going to affect your understanding of the rate of remission or if there even is one, as opposed to it being an ongoing condition. So that's a thing to be careful with. Millen subtypes. In his book, Personality Disorders in Modern Life, Theodore Millon, M-I-L-L-O-N, describes five... Oh, okay. I had no idea. That's a little ethnic, and I had no context for that.
Yeah, I know. You wouldn't.
Yeah. Okay, so Theodore Millon describes five types of obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, which he shortened to compulsive personality disorder. That's not that much shorter, dude. So these are his types under the OCPD umbrella. Conscientious, puritanical, bureaucratic, parsimonious, or bedeviled. These are his labels for this. The last one kind of kills me. That's cute in an archaic kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, causes of OCPD. Source for this is the wiki with some sources in there, but I'm not going to go through all that tonight. So the cause of OCPD, according to there, is thought to involve a combination of genetic and environmental factors. As Dr. Mathis mentions earlier, some of these things definitely have a genetic component.
Yep.
There is clear evidence to support the theory that OCPD is genetically inherited. However, the relevance and impact of genetic factors varies with studies placing it somewhere between 27% and 78%. Too few studies have dealt with the specific gene involved in the disorder's heritability, and more research is required to ascertain the exact genes. Other studies have found links between attachment theory and the development of OCPD. According to this hypothesis, those with OCPD never developed a serious attachment style, had overbearing parents, were shown little care, and were unable to develop empathetically and emotionally. And I'm actually going to give you a chance to jump in here because we have quite a bit going on in the next section. So I want to give you an opportunity to comment just in case you're holding something in.
Okay, I'm not even going to do a joke about that last one.
Everybody knows this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So what's interesting is from a personal perspective, because, I mean, I joke about it a lot, but I really do have OCPD and actually like it and wish the whole flipping planet had it. Part of the reason I have all that stuff after my name is, frankly, is efficacious use of the OCPD coupled with my IQ points, which are fairly decent, which is a good thing. The OCPD stuff would, if you don't manage it, and that's why you see this big discrepancy between, you know, well, does it go away or is it relevant and does it hang on or does it go away with time, really depends on how much of it do you have, because obviously everything's a degree. It's not like black and white. You got it and you're like horrible, or you don't have it at all. But generally, the more severe case that you have, and if you don't figure out ways to channel the energy that stuff generates, then it really, really does a number on you. And, you know, from time to time, it does a number on me. I don't manage my stuff well, and I drive myself and pretty much everybody in my immediate environment kind of nuts. But if you can harness it, you can really use it to do a lot of things and get a lot of stuff done, but you've really got to be careful with it. And you've also got to remind yourself that everything in nature is a balance. So there's a time to just be a slug, and there's time to drive yourself, you know, very hard. And sometimes it's hard to achieve that balance. And people with OCPD, such as myself, sometimes find that to be a difficult balance. And folks in our cluster tend to be more of the OCPD type in the cluster Cs. Tend to be more driven and will err on the side of perfectionism and overwork than in the other side generally. So I really had to develop a style that kind of balances the two. All of the OC type disorders, whether it's full blown OCD or OCPD, they're all based in some kind of fear. Yeah, which is why they're like anxiety disorders. They're all fear-based disorders. In fact, all the cluster C personality disorders are anxiety/fear-based disorders, which is why I call everybody in cluster C, including myself, a chicken shit. That's what the C stands for, or coward, right? Because we all have our little, ooh, ooh, Lordy. You know, and we all get scared and run like little chickens right when the fit hits the shan. But instead of running, what we do is we run with our perfectionism and our, like, no, it's got to be this way, and rigidity and like stubbornness. And so when you, the trick is to feel the, you know, the oh my God coming up in you, and go, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Let's not get crazy with this, and kind of back off that and recognize what it is, and then refocus it and say, okay, look, I'm generating this energy. Yeah, there's something to be concerned about, but it's not this concerning. Maybe you can generate this energy and all this adrenaline and you know, crazy cortisol you've generated, and take that energy and redirect it into something constructive. If you can do that, OCPD can be a really great addition. And I say that in all seriousness, a really great addition to your arsenal of get stuff done stuff. But the other half of that is, you know, you've got to learn when to let go. And so my kind of my moniker to myself is, once somebody proves to me that they're not a moron, that they're bright, that they can do a task as well or better than I can, and in some cases that's not a high bar, particularly when you come to electronics and mechanics, that's a very low bar. But you know, it's something that I'm good at, you know, and that normally I want to take charge of because I want to make sure the thing's done right, quote unquote. Well, if somebody comes in and they prove that they can do it as well or better than I can, I am more than happy to let them take over. I'm like, holy moly, knock yourself out. And I don't feel the need to go back and double check them and micromanage them. A lot of the OCPD people do that. I refuse to do that. That, I mean, that defeats the purpose for me. It doesn't make rational sense. So I've learned how to back off on that stuff and how to delegate responsibility, providing somebody shows me they have a brain and know how to use it. And if they do, I am uber happy to let them do stuff. That's like woohoo for me. I can tell you that my OCPD pretty much cuts across most different environmental situations and has remained relatively stable in my life. The one thing that's changed is I've learned to manage it better, and I get better and better as I look at different things. I go, oh, I can, you know, do this and get a handle on this, and I can take this and morph it into this. So I've learned over the years, I've learned how to manage it a whole lot better, and so it doesn't interfere with my stuff as much. But, you know, I'm just like the rest of the listeners. If I don't manage my stuff well, every night it comes back and goes, hi, remember us? We're back. You know, and it's really very inconvenient. And, you know, part of the reason I have this crazy pun-related sense of humor is to make fun of myself, to kind of let go of some of the anxiety. Because if you're laughing at yourself, you can't be laughing and stressed out at the same time. That's part of the reciprocal inhibition phenomena. And I use it on myself a lot, and it really does help. But, you know, you just got to get more jiggy on it, just like anybody with any disorder does. You've got to figure out coping tools to minimize the negative aspects of it. But if you can use it in a, harness it in a kind of cool way, it can be really, really great. There's a lot of OCPD people whom I've met who, you know, and I'm very ethical and moral, and I have very high standards, and I don't take very well to people who don't. Quite honestly, I still have a big problem with that, and I just avoid people that don't share my level of ethics and morals. I don't judge them to be bad. I just don't want to be around them. I find them not to my liking. But what I don't do that some of my OCD people do is, you know, try to run other people's lives and to tell other people what to do that don't have a doggone thing to do with me. And because my whole thing is, if you're not impacting my life and my immediate environment, I don't really give a flip what you do. None of my business, actually. That's a boundary transgression. So I just kind of, you know what, if they want to do that, let them have it. Good on them. And, oh, look at the time, got to go. I just kind of remove myself from the situation. I just don't let their stuff get to me, you know. Because otherwise, if you try to micromanage them and you try to tell them what to do, then you end up looking like a borderline. And that's not a good thing. So I'm like, no, we don't do that. We don't do cluster B stuff. We stay in our lane and do our cluster C thing. We're not going to go over and cross boundaries into the cluster B personality disorders like they do. No, we're not doing that. So you know, you just got to watch it. And And thank God I don't do that. And thank God I don't let that kind of stuff get to me, you know, because a lot of my co-conspirators in my diagnostic group do that. And I'm like, nope, that's a bad idea.
Gotcha. All righty. Let's go ahead and keep going to see if we can manage to make this a two-parter. We might not, but that's fine. We'll figure it out. All right. So the differences between these two. OCD seems to be compulsive and uncontrollable and a source of anxiety and shame for sufferers who want to stop but cannot.
Yep.
Also, it is usually often comprised of random, repetitive behaviors such as checking things or washing a specific number of times for no conscious reason.
Yep.
OCP, on the other hand, seems to be extreme but much more conscious and deliberate. Those who have it can often be proud of how in control of their environment they can be. They know why they think, and often don't seek to stop. What are the key differences between the two?
Yeah, it is very, for me, if I manage it, it's very egocentric. It matches really well. I don't know any OCD people who would say that their OCD is egocentric. That's all ego dystonic for them. It goes against their stuff. They don't like it. It's disturbing for them.
Which just so happens to be what I'm literally about to talk about.
There you go. Well, yeah. Whoop, there it is.
Yeah. So OCD is often confused with the separate condition obsessive compulsive personality disorder. OCD, as Dr. Mathis was just mentioning, is ego dystonic, which means that the disorder is incompatible with the sufferer's self-concept. Because ego dystonic disorders go against a person's self-concept, they tend to cause much distress. OCPD, on the other hand, is egocentric, which is marked by the person's acceptance that the characteristics and behaviors displayed as a result are compatible with their self-image or are otherwise appropriate, correct, or reasonable. As a result, people with OCD are often aware that their behavior is not rational, are unhappy about their obsessions, but nevertheless feel compelled by them. By contrast, people with OCPD are not aware of anything abnormal, per se. They will readily explain why their actions are rational. It's usually impossible to convince them otherwise, and they tend to derive pleasure from their obsessions or compulsions.
That's the one difference from me and my cohorts in that regard. I totally recognize it's abnormal. I just like it anyway, if I manage it. But I am the first to tell you that in that regard, this boy ain't right. The vernacular of the South. Yeah.
There you go. This enough about him.
There you go.
So diagnosis of OCD. Formal diagnosis may be performed by a psychologist, psychiatrist, clinical social worker, or other licensed mental health professional. To be diagnosed with OCD, a person must have obsessions, compulsions, or both. And actually, I'm going to stop you here. I realize in my notes that we've never really explained the difference between obsessions and compulsions. Is that something that you could do a real quick explanation of? I know I'm
funny you should say that, because I was about to ask you, would you like me to explain this? So there you go. So in a short burst, if I can actually do that, Mr. Chatty Boy, obsessions are thoughts that won't go away inside your head. They're like, you know, it's like rats running around on a maze on a one of those wheels, like hamsters running on a wheel. It's just a thought that goes over and over and over and over and over and over and over in your head, and you can't get that thought out. And then as soon as you think you got it mastered, 20 minutes later, it's like, it's back, and it's running in your head over and over and over. Compulsions are the actions that you feel compelled, if you will, to do, forced to do. You got to do them based on your irrational obsessions, excuse me. I'll get it out in a minute. So if you think what the compulsions are designed to do is to make whatever fear-based obsessive thought you're having not happen. It's like witchcraft. You know, it's like, okay, well, if I count the number of times I touch the door handle before going out of the door, I'll avert whatever scared thing I think is going to happen. What do you think is going to happen? I don't know, but it's going to be bad. And I can't get it out of my head, so I'm going to touch the doorknob 3 times and clear my throat 2 times, and then I'm going to open the door. So the clearing your throat and touching the doorknob 3 times are the behavioral compulsions that are based on the obsessive ruminations you're doing in your head.
Gotcha. Okay. That's fair. All right. I am looking through my notes, and I can tell you right now that we're not going to get through all of them in the next 5 minutes, since it's 11:55. So I'm taking a look to see where is a good stopping place. And that may be a little
Oh, gosh, difficult. You're right. There's a lot more to cover.
There certainly is. We've been a little chattier than usual in between, but as we've often said, we would much prefer to keep the discussion going so that we cover everything for you guys. We don't want to shortchange you just in the name of the radio show, because we can always come back next time and talk about stuff. So,
yep, absolutely.
You know, that is perfectly fine. So we've talked about, let me finish up the section on diagnosis of OCD. And
sure.
I think I want to kind of use that as a cutoff point. So the DSM-5 places obsessive compulsive personality disorder under section 2 under the personality disorders chapter. And it defines it as a pervasive pattern of preoccupation with orderliness, perfectionism, and mental and interpersonal control at the expense of flexibility, openness, and efficiency, beginning by early adulthood and present in a variety of contexts. A diagnosis of OCPD is only received when at least 4 out of the 8 criteria are met. And I actually think we could finish this one chunk on differential diagnosis, and then I think we'll call it an evening after that.
Okay.
So differential diagnosis. There are several mental disorders in the DSM-5 that are listed as differential diagnosis for OCPD. And I do have a question for you. Can you explain exactly what is differential diagnosis? I see this term a lot, but I don't have enough context to understand what they're talking about. But I think it is stuff that can be mistaken for the other thing.
Exactly. So you're going, what is different from about this disorder from other disorders, and why should you not confuse it with other disorders?
Okay. So I was close.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good. All right. So these are several of the disorders that are listed as differential diagnoses for OCPD.
Yeah, and you want to rule those out prior to giving somebody whatever disorder you're trying to do a differential diagnosis for.
Yes. So what they have listed is OCD, of course.
Yeah,
OCT, OCD and OCPD have a similar name, which causes confusion. However, OCD can be easily distinguished from OCPD by the absence of true obsessions or compulsions. It's usually just random doing of a thing, and you don't have an order to it, and you're embarrassed by it, but you can't help yourself. That's kind of the big difference. Hoarding disorder. A diagnosis of hoarding disorder is only considered when the hoarding behavior exhibited is causing severe impairment in the functioning of the person, such as inability to access rooms in their house due to excessive hoarding.
And like OCPD and OCD, it is a fear-based type disorder, but it's not OCD and it's not OCPD. And that's why sometimes people go, oh, you have OCD. No, you're a hoarder. They're both fear-based disorders. If I get rid of this, I might need it later.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because we did an episode of that specifically on hoarding, but we didn't get a lot into what the fear was behind it. So that's good.
Yeah. Fear, I might need this later. Somehow, if I throw this away, 2 weeks from now, 10 years from now, I'm going to go, darn, I could have had a V8, and I threw that empty can away.
Gotcha. Okay, another one is narcissistic personality disorder, believe it or not. Those with NPD tend to be stingy and lack generosity. However, They're usually generous when spending on themselves. Unlike those with OCPD who hoard money and are miserly on themselves and others.
Yep.
Which is interesting. I haven't seen the miserly thing too often. So this was a bit of a surprise that was on the list. But
That's more normal. I mean, I can get like that. And I'm very careful about how I spend money. And I think about it a lot. But if it's something that's just obviously, this is a duh, and stop being an OCPD jerk, I go, okay, yeah, I just need to get over it. Excuse me. But again, that's, you know, and this is the conversation I have with myself, right?
Yes.
It's like, come on, dude, don't be a total dumbass. Let's go. Come on. Really?
Yeah.
You know, but I do have those tendencies. I have to, you know, I just have to put a lid on my id. You know?
Yeah. And, you know, it's fair to recognize it. That's always good. Self-awareness is happy.
Mm-hmm.
Other disorders that could be mistaken are antisocial personality disorder. And remind you guys, that's where they folded sociopathy and psychopaths and all that. It's now under this umbrella. Antisocial personality disorder, they are not generous and they're miserly around others, although they usually overindulge themselves also, like a couple of other things. On this
uh-huh.
list. And sometimes they have moments where they're completely reckless in their spending. You know, it's almost
uh-huh.
like the boomerang comes around the other way completely.
The narcissists are like that too.
Yes, yes. Schizoid personality disorder. Schizoid personality disorder and OCPD may both display restricted affectivity and coldness. However, in OCPD, this is usually due to a controlling attitude, whereas in SPD, it occurs due to a lack of ability to experience emotion and display affection. And
yeah.
This actually reminds me a tiny bit of the possible Asperger's connection. You know,
yeah, I was going to say, and yeah, they're very much like the spectrum people in that regard.
Yes, there's a social atrophy going on.
Mm-hmm.
That,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and then other personality traits. Obsessive-compulsive personality traits may be particularly useful and helpful, especially in productive environments. Only when these traits become extreme, maladaptive, and cause clinically significant impairment in several aspects of one's life should a diagnosis of OCPD be considered. And prognosis, quality of life is reduced across all domains in OCD. While psychological or pharmacological treatment can lead to a reduction of OCD symptoms and an increase in quality of life, symptoms may persist at moderate levels even following adequate treatment courses, and completely symptom-free periods are uncommon. And here I'm going to pause and let's
That's
check
true.
In and see
yeah.
if Dr. Mathis wants to add anything else before we go ahead and wrap this up.
No, I think that's a really good summary.
Okay. So I'm going to put a marker here in the script for the next time because we're going to need to do this again, and that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. All right, so there's that. And then so next time we will talk about myths and misconceptions. We've talked about it a little bit tonight, but we're going to do like a whole dedicated section and then resources for coping. So we'll talk about that. And is there anything else that you want to add in before we wrap up? Anything from earlier or anything else related
no.
to this? Okay.
No, we're good. We're good.
Fabulous. So in summary, we hope now that our listeners better understand more about OCD and OCPD, and we have a little more to share with you yet. And this can be used to cut down on erroneous self-diagnosis and romanticizing of these pathologies that we pick up through media and entertainment. And so this concludes tonight's show, OCD versus OCPD Part 2, no longer of 2, now of 3. So on behalf of myself, Dr. Mathis, and NDB Media, we want to thank our listeners this evening and give our appreciation to those of you who may be joining us later via podcast, iTunes, etc. So we'll see you guys in 2 weeks with a new topic for discussion on Wednesday, January 20th. And won't that be funny?
Well, we're trying to be complete and compulsive in our description.
And also because we had I mean, this is not a political show, but we had political adventures today. Some of you may remember I'm in D.C., not in the city proper, thank God. But that'll be Inauguration Day, so that should be fun. 11 p.m. Eastern Time, provided there is an Earth to come to, right here on blogtalkradio.com. Also, tonight was 12th night and our 100th show, as a reminder again. And I'm going to give us some more applause just because I think that's super cool. And I couldn't think of anything interesting to do about it, but I just want to acknowledge that because I'm very happy. I'd also like to give a shout out to other NDB Media shows that are coming up in the next couple of weeks. I don't have updates for many of the shows ahead of time, so I'm just giving you the time slots for most of them. But keep an ear out for the following fellow shows on NDB Media. Travelage Radio is on Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time with Dan Schlossberg and Mary Ellen Nugent Lee. Travel Itch Radio returns from holiday hiatus to begin its 10th season tomorrow night with its 39th episode on Thursday, January 7th. And the host and executive producer, Dan Schlossberg, and co-host, Mary Ellen Nugent Lee, will interview special guest, Mallory Yolen Cohen. And it does not say what she does, but at any rate, you all can tune in tomorrow and find out what she does and why she's interesting. Coming Saturday, Sports Talk with the Guys, Saturday morning extravaganza, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. The Monday morning quarterbacks are live on Saturday morning. Sunday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, and World Beyond online viewing parties were slated to resume at the end of February 2021. Please stay tuned for possible one-time special presentations until then, such as the Walker Vocabulary Primer. And I don't know if we're going to be doing that, but we'll see. We're having a little fun with the vocabulary. 100 different nicknames for walkers. Yay. Monday, 10 p.m. is Monday Night in America with Roger Noriega. Roger brings you his unique take on politics, current events, entertainment, sci-fi, and history. This show may alternate on some Monday nights with another new show, The Nightmare Hunter, with Roger Noriega in the same time slot. And Tuesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time is Fandom Access Week in Review. Join the ingenious insights of Jamie, Karen, and AJ as they digest another night of TV. We will also have specials for you, including political coverage and commentary as major events happen, including an inauguration special at 8:30 p.m. on January 20th, 2021, and more. And just to note, because it's inauguration, we don't think that there will be a conflict, but just be prepared for there to possibly be one show running over. But we will address that as soon as we can and let you guys know if we're running late or whatever happens. All right. So thank you for joining us. We always appreciate you guys. Please look for the Rock and Roll Shrink on Facebook, on Twitter, on iTunes, and on the web at www.rockandrollshrink.com. Good night, everybody. See you next time. Thanks for joining us, and rock on.